Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. So joyous to be with all of you. I still want to share with you that Deacon Harold Berg Sivers and I are being requested to bring our mission to parishes across the country, and there's still spaces. So if you're interested, reach out to events@drmarcuspeter.com or events@deaconharold.com, and our event manager will get in touch with you. And that's a big part of how we get to expand the great work of the gospel to the ends of the earth in the United States. Now, I also want to share with you this. If you're looking for a new addition to your garden or patio area, you might want to look at the Holy Family statue. It features Joseph standing behind Mary, who's holding the Christ child. Joseph's arms are outstretched to protect his precious family. The statue is painted in a natural granite finish, and it's designed for indoor or outdoor use. You can find it at EWTNRC.com, EWTN Religious Catalog, RC.com. Free standard shipping on orders of $75 or more with the code FREE at checkout. Now, for this hour, we're going to begin by talking with my friend, Dr. Matthew Bunsen. In his general audience yesterday, thank the Lord, Pope Leo has made a very clear statement urging Catholics to prioritize physically attending Sunday Mass. He actually warned that active participation in the Eucharist cannot be replaced by virtual gatherings. One of the things that Matthew and I will discuss is that during COVID, our churches, our dioceses created the structures for virtual attendance of Mass because of lockdown protocols, and inadvertently, we created paradigms for bad habits to develop, chief among which is that there are many Catholics to this day who still log on to virtual Masses when they're capable of attending physical Masses. And the reality is that concession is available for those who are homebound, for those who are unable to attend, but Pope Leo is making very clear that virtual Masses don't replace physical active participation in the Eucharist, especially if we are capable of being there. We talk more about this and other news with Matthew Bunsen. After that, we talk with Brian Caulfield. Today is the feast day of Blessed Michael McGivney. It's a very unique feast day. He's the founder of the Knights of Columbus. We're going to talk about the founding of the Knights of Columbus, the background of Father Michael McGivney, why he's such a pivotal character, and why seeking his intercession is a good thing. For now, the headlines.
Thank you, Marcus, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, August 13th. It's the feast of Blessed Michael McGivney. And today's news is brought to you by Ave Maria University. Your vocation location is at avemaria.edu. Rescue efforts in Western Colombia are still underway. The death toll from Monday's catastrophic 7.4 magnitude earthquake has risen to 265, with nearly 500 people still missing and thousands injured. International search teams are on the ground using cranes and heavy equipment to dig through the flattened buildings in the hardest hit cities. Attorneys for the man accused of killing Charlie Kirk are looking to take the death penalty off the table. In a newly filed motion, they asked the judge to strike the aggravating factor that makes Tyler Robinson eligible for capital punishment. The defense argues that the state has failed to provide probable cause that Robinson knowingly created a giant risk of death to another than Charlie Kirk. A military helicopter crashed north of Austin, Texas yesterday afternoon, claiming the lives of two U.S. soldiers. Bell County Sheriff's Office spokesperson Cliff Coleman says the crash sparked a grass fire that grew about 155 acres. The U.S. Army says the AH-64 Apache attack helicopter went down near the town of Salado. The cause of the crash is under investigation. And a Tennessee inmate is dead by execution for the 1985 murder of a motel maid. 66-year-old Anthony Darrell Hines died by lethal injection this morning at Riverbed Maximum Security Institution. A jury convicted Hines of fatally stabbing 54-year-old Catherine Jenkins while she worked at the Kingston Springs Motel. From the AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, and as usual, I'm joined by my dear friend, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. He's always very generous with his time and with his wisdom in walking us through events in the life of the church and current church news. Matthew, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Privilege, as always, to be with you.
Well, the privilege and honor is always mine. And I want to begin by saying that while you and I regularly connect virtually, we connect via phone, via Comrex, via internet, I am actually really pleased to see Pope Leo make a statement about virtual mass attendance.
That's right. It's something obviously that has been in discussion really since COVID, when parish priests and whole dioceses had to figure out a way to have virtual masses. Now, that doesn't mean the masses didn't happen or they weren't real, but they had to figure out a way to broadcast, to stream, and everything else. And the problem with that is that once COVID was over, there has been obviously this struggle at times to get Catholics to come back to regular masses in person. And part of it is people fill their lives up with other things, or people just got lazy and they would simply watch the virtual stream from their sofas. And all of that leads up to what Pope Leo XIV had to say at his general audience just yesterday. And the point he's making is that active participation in the Eucharist cannot be replaced by anything that's virtual. So as he said, you know, find the conditions so that even those who are unable to take time off work on Sundays may take part in the Mass. And so that's also a lesson for the church.
I'm really glad that you highlighted all of those particular issues that people have faced. I unfortunately, I think inadvertently, one of the things that wound up happening during COVID was the lockdown protocols that the church initiated for broadcasting masses subtly communicated, and again, inadvertently, of course, that, well, now this is an option you can consider based on your convenience.
Yeah, and once people develop a habit, or once human beings fall out of a habit, sometimes it's very, especially good ones, it can be very difficult, very challenging to get people to go back to what had long been a routine of their lives. And I think I think you said something really important, Marius, and that the word unintentional. An unintentional message was sent that, okay, once COVID is over, you don't necessarily have to come back. You can still watch streaming masses. Now, having said that, we also have to make note of the fact that there is a large percentage of the population, many of our listeners and our viewers, who may not necessarily have a chance to leave their houses. They might be shut-ins, they may be elderly, that sort of thing. In which case, these streamed masses really are a great gift. They're valuable. And I know that I hear myself from people all over the world expressing gratitude just for what EWTN broadcasts. And I know what the efforts that Ave puts into making sure that people can stay connected with the church. What Leo is talking about, though, is the four Catholics, those who can, you really do need, you have an obligation to go to Sunday Mass. And if this is why we have, ideally, a lot of Mass options for people on the vigil and then throughout the day. And I live in Washington, D.C., as you know, and there are a lot of universities here. One of them happens to be Catholic U in Georgetown. And both of them have what are colloquially called last chance masses. So there's very little excuse that, darn, I missed the 5 o'clock Sunday Mass. I guess I'm not going to be able to do that. No, you really have an obligation to go to Sunday Mass. So find one. That's why last chance masses exist.
I love the term. It's like, nope, we're going to get you in by hook or by crook.
That's right. And so don't complain if and don't claim that there aren't any. It may require a little bit of driving, the same amount of driving you're probably willing to put in to go to a restaurant or to an amusement park.
Or a baseball game, you know, like.
Or a baseball game,
that,
yep.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that in developing these habits, like you mentioned, and a very, very Thomistic premise that you bring up, that habits once formed are very difficult to break, whether good habits or bad habits.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's why the perfection of the virtues in our lives, So much of it has to become habitual in our lives. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be free from temptation or anything else. But as you try to practice these virtues, the cardinal virtues in the most practical sense, that forming those habits. And I think one other really important point that I think that the Holy Father is trying to make here too, is that in our lives, especially if we have family, that cultivating that habit as part of your daily life is very essential if you're trying to raise children who also will stay in the church. That this the practice of Sunday Masses, the practice of devotions, of prayers, of availing yourselves of the sacraments, especially the sacrament of penance, that if that becomes a centerpiece of your life, it is integrated into your daily life, it will stay with them in a way that is much more likely to be a permanent habit than if you are spotty in your mass attendance, you don't pray together, you don't do everything you can to raise Catholic faithful children. So I think that's one of the side lessons that Leo is very subtly trying to give us.
I couldn't agree more. And that's so right. It's such an exhortation for all of us, especially for those of us parents trying to raise children, grandparents who are trying to be a good example to their adult children and grandchildren. And now, pursuant from that very important topic, the Holy Father for the World Day of Peace is now choosing the theme AI and War. Matthew, before we talk about his particular statement here, I just want to touch on the brilliance of Magnifica Humanitas. And despite what I believe to be really undue criticisms of the document and him as a person, the wisdom of the document is really showing, especially in the fact that now he's calling for AI and war as themes for the World Day of Peace.
Yeah, and this is building out from, as you say, his encyclical Magnifica Humanitas. And part of it is, and we go back to that document, and you and I spent days unpacking it. Part of it is this reiteration with great clarity of Catholic social teaching, the principles of that. But he then uses those principles to look at something like artificial intelligence. But it's also this idea of what is authentic. And then the question is, how do we apply that to something like war? And what we're seeing is the development, and this is pretty alarming, of autonomous weaponry. So I would send everyone to ncregister.com for a really interesting piece by Jonah McKeown. And the title of it is The Killer Robots Have Arrived. And essentially, the church is standing firm against autonomous weapons. Now, this is what they're called lethal autonomous weapon systems or laws. In other words, you push a button and these weapons, drones and other forms of armaments, of technology, go into a Terminator mode. And we know from the reality that what we would think of as just scenarios have actually happened. We know that from a weapons test in Ukraine from 2 years ago that actually led to the deaths of several Russian soldiers, which is believed to have been the first completely autonomous kill in combat. Now, that should send off alarms everywhere. And I think this goes to the heart of what Pope Leo is trying to tell us, that entrusting military decisions to artificial intelligence is an immense risk for humanity. And it removes any moral component. In part because the way the algorithms are written and the way that artificial intelligence functions, there is no guarantee that any ethical, responsible, and moral decisions can actually be made under those circumstances.
This is going to call for a new application of moral theological principles, because the notion of autonomous weapons that can cause mass harm isn't something that we've had to consider under classical moral theology paradigms. I'm talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. We're going to continue on the other side of the break because, like Matthew is highlighting, Pope Leo XIV has recently chosen the theme of AI and war for World Day of Peace. And one of the main reasons why is because autonomous weaponry is a reality. And frankly, this is where the military-industrial complex has tried to push the development of AI technology. Continuing on the other side, stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
This Ave Maria program brought to you in part by the following nonprofit.
One of the greatest threats to your family isn't a disaster or a virus, but addiction. In nearly every family and every pew, someone is silently struggling. Beginning July 11th, Shalom World TV and the iThirst Initiative present Unshackled, a powerful new series on the Catholic Church's response to the addiction crisis, bringing together leading voices to discuss real healing. Stream it free at shalomworld.org or on the Shalom World app today.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTN News, a dear friend and frankly one of the wisest, most salient individuals I know commenting on the life of the church right now. And Matthew, you were bringing up this extremely important topic of autonomous weaponry and large-scale autonomous weaponry. I want to invite you to just share the fact that from the advent of the potential of artificial intelligence technology, this was always something that was looming. It's not like this came out of left field. This was one of the intentions.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you're making a really important point that it's not like this technology suddenly emerged and no one had ever heard of it. And, oh, what do we do now? the church has been warning about this for a very long time. Ethicists, moral theologians, and scientists have been warning about this potential development. And it isn't simply potential anymore. As we have seen just in the last 3-4 years, the leaps that have been made in the development of artificial intelligence have, I think, outstripped even the most, one can say, optimistic expectations of some of their creators. And it has raised this development obvious, severe questions of parameters, boundaries, limitations, guidelines. I mean, you name it. What sort of firewalls do we have in place? And I think that's one of the points that Pope Leo was making in Magnifica Humanitas, where he says that AI does not remove the intrinsic inhumanity of conflict. Indeed, it can only bring about conflict more quickly and render it. And here's a really important part. It renders it more impersonal, lowering the threshold for resorting to violence, transforming defense into threat prediction, and thus reducing victims to mere data. When you begin to objectify or reduce the human person simply to a series of data points within an algorithm that is operated by an artificial intelligence system, you are immediately removing the dignity of the human person, the right to life on that person, and ultimately virtually all forms of human flourishing. So this is an alarm, I think, that is being raised, but it's also, I think, is a series of opportunities that when we are faced with these challenges, as Pope Francis stressed, now Pope Leo is stressing, this is an opportunity for us just to say, all right, let's come together and work our way through ways to deal with this that are ethical, that are moral, that actually defend human dignity, but that also reduce the risk of warfare, not heighten it.
And frankly, just reinstate the reality of moral accountability. I mean,
You almost wish Arnold Schwarzenegger was on speed dial so that someone could call him to reiterate the entire narrative of Terminator 1 and 2. This is literally what Skynet was all about.
Yes, I think I've mentioned it before, a very obscure 1970 film called Colossus, the Forbin Project, in which the entire defense of the United States is placed in the hands of an AI system, of course, that discovers another AI system in what was then the Soviet Union, and the two AI systems join up together to try to take over the world. And the film, when it came out, was considered far-fetched, pure science fiction. And yet here we are with people actually contemplating, how is there a way, for example, to hand over our national defense to an AI system? After all, it's impersonal. It can think far faster than humans. I mean, these are questions that we're looking at, what now, 56 years ago, that question was raised. And as you and I have said on a number of occasions, as depressing as it is, the worst, most fevered dreams of science fiction writers very often come true. And we have seen that in literature. We see that in science fiction films. And we are living through the emergence, the fulfillment of some of the worst fears of a lot of scientists and dystopian writers.
H.G. Wells could not possibly have conceived where we are now. Which
that's right.
It raises that question. You remember so when Magnifica Humanitas came out, and you and I both talked about the undue criticism the document was getting, one of which was towards Pope Leo's statements on just war theory.
Mm-hmm.
But he was completely right in that when just war theory was written out as a moral theological principle, we did not even have the notion of weapons of mass destruction, let alone artificial intelligence autonomous weaponry.
And one thing that as we look objectively through the evolution of how the church has approached the just war theory, yes, there are still all of those terms that you and I have talked about it, but making those prudential judgments about how we go about waging war to determine whether a war is just. We lived for 70 plus years under the shadow of the Soviet Union and, of course, the People's Republic of China with their mass accumulations of nuclear weapons. That was at the time described as mad, mutually assured destruction. We're now in a new age, as we're seeing with these autonomous weapon systems and the emergence of AI. It does require a rethinking of how we are approaching the question of determining what is a just war, and especially, you know, those technical terms. There are reasons why we have them. Ius ad bellum, of the justice of going to war, but then also ius in bello, how a war is waged. And AI clearly is impacting both of those aspects of how we approach determining whether a war is just. In particular, I think, ius in bello, how we are waging war. Because an AI autonomous system is revolutionizing, is transforming potentially the global military landscape and the conduct of military operations in a way that I think is extremely dangerous. And I think that's one of the points that you note that Pope Leo is making in saying we have to look at the question of how we're approaching just war from these new perspectives.
To pivot, and I know you and I could go quite at length with that conversation. I have no doubt it's going to come up again.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something of some slight humor. The White Sox are honoring Pope Leo with a Pope Night. Now, I thought it was good. I thought it was a home run on their part. But that whole thing with the branded mitre,
I know that quite a few people had a few qualms, let's put it that way, about handing out what looked like a mitre. It's why I always referred to it instead as a Pope hat rather than and a mitre, just so there's no possible confusion about what this is. One thing that I will say is that Pope Leo is a dedicated, lifelong White Sox fan. And that is a matter of public record. It's very clear that as Pope, he continues that love for the White Sox. And the White Sox franchise itself isn't exploiting it. They're celebrating. We saw that with the mass Thanksgiving last year. We saw this event the other night. And it also says something about the popularity of Pope Leo, and also that phrase, Catholic is cool right now. And I say that because they were originally going to hand out a couple hundred of these gifts, as these Pope hats. And there was such intense interest in it that they ended up actually having to make and give away 40,000 in the stadium. And then on top of all of that, you had a moment of the exchange of peace among everyone in the stands. So this became an opportunity for prayer, for getting to know the Holy Father a bit more, for introducing many people, perhaps for the first time, to Catholicism, to a great symbol of Catholicism, to prayer, to fellowship, to what it means to give and offer peace to someone else. So all in all, I think, well, one might have quibbles with some of the sartorial choices of this Pope hat. I think the gesture was a really interesting one and a nice cultural moment at a time when we need more moments of peaceful gestures toward each other. Although my last comment on that would be, I'd have a hard time seeing Yankee fans and Red Sox fans giving each other the sign of peace.
You know, but I agree with you. I completely agree with you. And I have a feeling that they're throwing a fit about this whole thing, that the Pope is a White Sox fan. But there are no plenary indulgences for being a White Sox fan, right, as far as I know?
Not that I'm aware of. Although I'd like to see how that would be written in canon law.
Well, Matthew, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your wisdom. Greatly appreciated, as always.
A joy to be with you, as always. Looking forward to next week.
My guest has been Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. We've been talking about a few things pertaining to Pope Leo's wisdom. And in particular, one of the things of real concern has been Pope Leo's concern for artificial intelligence being incorporated into war. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you feel as though life is flying past you? Are you desperate for a way to find moments of peace and quiet? Lord, Teach Me to Pray, the free Ignatian Prayer Series, will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord, Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Want to get more out of family time? Well, here's a simple tip. Look for the differences that make a difference. Keep track of the times your family gets along better throughout the day and ask yourself, what made this work? Write down your answers in a family care notebook. Did you all work better together? Write down why. Did everyone get along on game night? Write down what worked. Was family prayer time especially good? Keep track of all the differences that make a difference in your family life. Then try to intentionally build those differences into your plans moving forward. Putting family time first and getting more out of your time together is one of the most important practices Catholic families can have. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, Visit CatholicCounselors.com.
What does Oratio Dominica mean? It refers to a prayer that is, according to the Catholic Catechism, truly unique. It is of the Lord. As the only Son of God the Father, Jesus, in speaking the words His Father gave Him, is the master of our prayer. In addition, as Word incarnate, Jesus, in His human heart, knows the needs of His human brothers and sisters. In revealing them to us, He is also the model of our prayer. Jesus, however, does not merely give us a formula to repeat mechanically. Jesus not only gives the words of the Our Father, He gives us the Spirit by whom the words become in us spirit and life. The prayer to Our Father is inserted into the mysterious mission of the Son and the Spirit. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Good afternoon, and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Father Michael McGivney, he's been beatified, and since his beatification about, I would say about 5 years ago now, we have seen a significant rise in the amount of prayers that are attributed to his intercession and therefore being answered. He's the founder of the Knights of Columbus. He was beatified 5 years ago on October the 31st. And knights and their families all throughout the world are devoted to him, and they've been praying fervently for his canonization. Joining me to talk about this prolific and important man in the life of the modern church is Brian Caulfield. Brian is the vice postulator for the sainthood cause of Blessed Michael McGivney. Brian, great to speak with you. How are you?
Oh, good. Thank you very much. Today's the feast day of Father McGivney.
Yeah, and therefore I just wanted to have this conversation with you. Wanted to begin by asking you to share just about the background of this amazing man and why what he did was so necessary.
Yeah, well, Father McGivney was a first-generation American. Both his parents were born in Ireland. They came over actually separately, during the potato famine in the 1850s. Came over to Connecticut in the U.S., and they met in Waterbury, which was a very busy factory, commerce city at the time, and they married. And Michael was their first child of eventually 13 children. And it was, Patrick McGivney, his father, was a worker in one of the factories. He was an iron molder, a little bit cut above, some of the workers in the factory. But they were all exposed to, the noxious fumes and the dangerous conditions. So Michael McGivney grew up in this environment where he was the eldest of 13. Six of his siblings died either, stillborn or in early childhood. He really, developed a heart for the working man through his father, developed a heart for the hardship of the immigrant, through the loss of his own siblings. And this really shaped his character as one with very great determination, hardworking, but also, with a heart open to the trials and tribulations of, mainly the Irish immigrant of his day. And when he finally heard the calling to be a priest, his father actually forbade him. He was age 13. He wanted to start preparing for the seminary. His pastor, Father Hendrickson, was very much in favor of it. But Mr. McGivney, very common at the time, said, "You're the oldest boy. You have to, work to help support the family." So young Michael, at age 13, he had finished school, went to work in a spoon factory in Waterbury. So both he and his father were factory workers. Here also, obviously, Michael developed that great sympathy and fellowship and solidarity with the working man. Finally, at age 16, the pastor finally prevailed upon Mr. McGivney to, I imagine, being Irish descent myself, kind of saying, Mr. McGivney, you wouldn't want to face St. Peter, at your dead and say your son was tonight, go into St. seminary. So Mr. McGivney relented, and fortunately, you know, for all of us, you know, for the church itself, for obviously the Knights of Columbus, for our 2 million members and their families throughout the world. And so, you know, Michael went to seminary. He finally, his father died when he was in seminary. He thought he would have to come home and continue working. You know, again, now they have, you know, many children at home. And his father died at age 48 when Michael was 20. So, you know, he thought he would have to come back to Waterbury. But the bishop of Hartford in Connecticut got word that his prize seminarian was thinking of dropping out. And he offered him a scholarship to go to St. Mary's in Baltimore, the first Catholic seminary in the U.S. And there Michael excelled. He was sacristan. He did well in his studies. And the rector at the time, you know, when it was time for his ordination, wrote something in his record, which is kind of interesting. And he wrote that, you know, he's a good young man. He'll do well in the ministry, but he's a little bit soft-headed. We don't really know what that means. But then he adds, usque ad lacrimas, which means even unto tears. So evidently, you know, Michael might have had the gift of tears, you know, which some saints speak of, like St. Ignatius and others, you know, the presence of God or the presence of suffering would move his heart so much. He was assigned to St. Mary's in New Haven, Connecticut. Again, that was a busy harbor, a busy port city at the time. Also the place of Yale University up to this day. And just to give you an example of the anti-Catholic prejudice at the time, we have the Know Nothing movement. We have many Masonic organizations, obviously anti-Catholic. And so St. Mary's, they built the church on Hillhouse Avenue, which is right on the outskirts of, you know, the prestigious Yale University campus. And the New York Times, of all things, ran an article saying, you know, how a Catholic edifice, you know, has pretty much spoiled the, you know, a great avenue of Hillhouse Avenue where all the best people live, and Yale University is there. And not only that, but, you know, the church is in debt, you know, which I guess to the, you know, Protestant work ethic was a sin worse than, you know, an apostasy or whatever, or heresy. It was in debt. In other words, they didn't know how to run a business. So that was the kind of prejudice. And, of course, this was the day when employers would put in their windows, you know, help wanted, Irish need not apply, which also meant Catholic need not apply. Mm-hmm. So this was the environment he grew up in. He was the assistant pastor, you know, curate, as they called it in those days. And he saw the need of his people, you know, working in the parish. And he saw the, a lot of, like his own father, a lot of the breadwinners, you know, in the factories, on the railroads, in the mines, you know, injuring or early death. And, you know, the widow, with many children, facing really bankruptcy in many instances. So, you know, it was an age of many fraternal benefit societies, some of them Catholic, but, you know, none of them really successful. So he wrote that he wanted to start a fraternal benefit society according to Catholic principles that would have equal or better benefits than these other secret societies, as they called them. And a bunch of men, he sent out word in New Haven, the go-ahead men of New Haven, as he called them, you know, men, despite all the anti-Catholicism, were getting ahead in society as lawyers or, you know, police constables or, you know, politicians. You know, they were rousing up the Irish vote. And so these are the men who came to his first meeting. And they all said, you know, we should do this. Some of these were veterans of the Civil War. Imagine that. That kind of places us in historical context. 1881, 1882. So it's, you know, really just 20 years, less than 20 years after the end of the Civil War. So we're talking about, you know, really experienced, hardened men who had gone through life experience. And the amazing thing to me and many others is that at this first meeting, and he made it clear, McGivney made it clear that this would be a lay organization. At the end of this first meeting, they asked Father McGivney to be, in a sense, what we call today the Supreme Knight, to be the head of the organization. And, you know, in his humility and in his plan for this organization, he said, no, that's not what I had at all in mind. But look at this. I mean, these are 30, 40-year-old men. He was a 28-year-old, junior priest, really, only 7 years in ministry. So there's something about Father McGivney in his day and even today that really attracts people. They see his leadership qualities, and it wasn't a bombastic, it was a very quiet, but they could see that he got things done. He got things done because he always followed the prompting of the Holy Spirit, the will of God, and he was tireless in his work in this area. So from that small beginning,
Let's pause there, Brian. The music is hitting, but we're going to continue on the other side of the break. Brian Caulfield is talking with us about Blessed Michael McGivney. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarindi here. You want to pass the Catholic faith on to your children? A very good way is to teach your children at home. You want to protect your kids from the toxic culture that surrounds us? Do you want to have a greater influence than what your kids are learning? Once more, a great way is to teach your children at home. No teacher is going to care about your kids as much as you do. Seton Home Study School is the best way to teach your children at home. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
This program is brought to you in part by Dave Tyson with Real Estate for Life, a faith-based organization, and Texana Bank, offering residential mortgage assistance across all 50 states, including purchases and refinances with conventional FHA and VA loans. More information can be found at re4l.org. Again, that's re4l.org.
All loans subject to credit approval. Texana Bank, NMLS 407536. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Ever get asked one of those tough questions, like, do Catholics worship Mary? And in that moment, you freeze? Truthfully, the Catholic AI app gives you answers in seconds rooted in scripture, tradition, and the magisterium. Whether you're navigating a tough conversation, deepening your faith, or looking for daily spiritual guidance, Truthly helps you know, live, and defend the Catholic faith. Truthly can be found in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Truthly, T-R-U-T-H-L-Y.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Mother Angelica said that the essence of evangelization is to tell everyone that Jesus loves you. Matt Frad says that it is one beggar showing another beggar where to find bread. Are we so full of the things of the world that we can't hear or receive the gifts that God is giving to us? In Isaiah we hear, "The Lord delights in you. I've called you by name. You are mine. You are precious in my eyes, and I love you." Well, we often don't want to hear that, and in the Gospel of Matthew, it hits us over the head even more that we're invited to be part of the kingdom of God. Jesus is king, and he's come to establish his kingdom. The Beatitudes are the eight roads to God. They lead us with his gifts of the Holy Spirit to become the new person in Christ who will find happiness and bring that happiness to others. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
He was a doctor of the church and one of the most famous saints of all time.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Augustine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, but he balanced his genius with humility. He once declared, "It was pride that changed angels into devils. It is humility that makes men as angels." He died in 461.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm talking with Brian Caulfield, Vice Postulator for the Sainthood Cause for Blessed Michael McGivney. Now, Brian, we got interrupted at the break, but before I have you continue about him being made Supreme Knight and in his humility, his response from there, one of the things I want to point out that many of our listeners will not know is, like you mentioned, today is the feast day, and this feast day is neither his birthday nor his day of death, which is typically either one of those becomes the declared feast day of the church for that particular saint. I wonder if you could share with us why it is that it's today.
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. And as you can tell, once I start talking about Father McGivney, it's one of my favorite topics, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, yes, when he came up to beatification, of course, you know, the Vatican worked with the Knights of Columbus to try to pick a feast day. And we realized that, he was born on August 12th, 1852, and he died 2 days past his 38th birthday on August 14th, 1890. And it was really the Vatican that came up with the notion of, why don't we place his feast day between those 2 days? And, you know, fortuitously, now we have what we call, you know, the McGivney 3 days, or 3 days of McGivney, or kind of in quotes, the Triduum. Of Father McGivney, the August 12th, 13th, and 14th, and obviously the 13th being his feast day, which, you know, we're speaking now on this day, and there's a special mass today at St. Mary's where he founded the Knights of Columbus in New Haven. And so his memory and his works, especially his works, you know, the miracle that was approved, for his beatification, and now the many, many favors we receive, you know, some of them just really extraordinary, through his intercession. Hopefully, you know, we're looking toward that canonization. No details or no, you know, specific date, but we urge people to, you know, continue praying, continue reporting any favors. And, you know, the Father McGivney Guild, which I oversee, we really, of course, we would love that, you know, that report of, you know, I was blind and now I see kind of thing. But we really cherish and relish the everyday favors, because I think it tells so much about the character of Father McGivney, who was really a priest of the everyday. He was a parish priest. He worked, you know, himself literally to death in parish work. He was 7 years at St. Mary's as assistant. And then he was made a pastor of a town called Thomaston, about 25 miles away from New Haven. And another, you know, I always point out his humility. And when he was appointed pastor, total obedience to the bishop. You know, he didn't say, oh, I'm this important person, you know, founded the Knights of Columbus. No, he went the 25 miles in those days, you know, the horse and buggy, or maybe the train. You know, it was quite a distance. And he did not bring, you know, the Supreme Council, so to speak, all the records and all the meetings to where he was. He put it upon himself to go to the meetings himself in New Haven. You know, the headquarters and the meetings remained in New Haven, all the books and everything, because he recognized, you know, once he became pastor, that he had, you know, that other obligation, his first obligation, really, to his people as a pastor of a parish.
Brian, one of the things that I want to ask you to speak to is why specifically the Knights of Columbus as well? I know you had begun alluding to that, but there was a particular drive there.
Yeah, well, Columbus, you know, we may not think of it today, you know, given all the wokeness, but yeah, Columbus in that day, in the 1880s, he was a revered figure for all Americans, you know, Catholic, Protestant. Everyone. He was a worldwide heroic figure. And so they chose Columbus as their patron, kind of to just say, you know, okay, you know, Protestants are ascendant in America at this time, but, you know, Columbus reminds us that the founding, you know, that the first explorer was a Catholic, and he sailed for Catholic Spain. He planted, you know, the Catholic faith here. So that was one way. And Father McGivney wanted to call the organization the Sons of Columbus.
Mm.
But actually, James Mullen, who became the first Supreme Knight, and he was a veteran of the Civil War. He was a police constable. And he said, no, Father, you know, we are already sons, you know. We want to be knights. We want to be, you know, that figure that sacrifices, you know, mm-hmm. for the church, that fights, you know, spiritually, you know, for the church. And, you know, we want regalia, and we want, you know, this kind of, you know, going through the process of becoming a first, second, or third degree knight. So, you know, Father McGivney said, okay, men, you know, this is your organization. You know, we'll call ourselves the Knights of Columbus.
Share with us, now, given that, right, share with us the kind of very clear male spirituality that is embodied by the Knights of Columbus. This concept that we're not out there fighting humongous battles that are won by blood and weapons, but the kind of battle the Knights of Columbus are engaging in is infinitely greater because it's about souls, it's about marriages, it's about families, and it's about raising boys to become virtuous men.
Yes, well, in one of his letters, you know, founding letters, Father McGivney said, we want to keep men close to the Catholic faith because some of them were leaving in order to join, you know, the Protestant secret societies because of the benefits for their families. So he didn't blame them. You know, it's not like he said, oh, you're anathema. He said, we have to give them something so that they will stay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also the genius of Father McGivney. It's like, don't curse the people. You know, you should be guiding, you know, and they have good intentions, so let's bring them back. So that was one of his motivations. And, of course, there's been, over the years, enormous... you know, today the Knights really are known for their charity. In the last 10 years, we've kind of stressed so much that charity has to be sort of the stepmaiden of the faith, right? We don't want to be an NGO, or we don't want to be, you know, just a charitable organization. We want our charity to flow from the heart of our faith. And right now, today, we have what we call CORE. C-O-R, the Latin for heart,
mm-hmm.
and it's a core program where men get together, they can discuss their faith, they have formation programs, and it's really growing by leaps and bounds throughout the order because men are starving, I think, today for that kind of fellowship, that kind of connection, you know, in this age of digital connection, which are really not, you know, good connections many times. The Knights are stressing face-to-face, person-to-person, brother sharpening, you know, sharpening brother in the faith, brother helping, lifting up brother in the faith. And then from that experience of charity in their hearts, then they have charity for others. And, you know, we just had our Supreme Convention, and, you know, sometimes I'm even amazed at the works that are reported, you know, between the Coats for Kids, the Foods for Family, the ultrasound initiative. We placed more than 2,000 ultrasounds in pro-life pregnancy centers over the years, saving countless unborn babies, you know, who now, you know, bear the name sometimes of the Knights that helped, you know, that helped fund that. So the charity of the Knights and, you know, any man over 18 years of age, Catholic man, who's a practicing Catholic is welcome to join. And also urge to join the Father McGivney Guild. That's the official organization promoting the cause. And just go to fathermcgivney.org, and you will see area to sign up. It's free. You would be remembered in the weekly mass offered by our priest for the all guild members and all their intentions. You go to the website, you'll see a big button that says, you know, submit your prayer intentions. And then another one says, report your favors. You know, that's really what we're focusing on now, because we need that one more miracle through the intercession of Father McGivney to bring him to canonization. So I always tell people, you join the guild, you become part of the cause in a very real way.
Can you share with us maybe at least one of the stories that we know has been attributed to his intercession?
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe some of your listeners aren't familiar with the first miracle. It was an unborn baby. in the womb. It was a family in Tennessee. The father was a knight, actually an insurance agent for the Knights of Columbus. And, you know, Michelle, this was the 13th child, very open to life. And they got a diagnosis first of Down syndrome. And in Vanderbilt Hospital, they advised or offered abortion. And, of course, they turned it down. And then another diagnosis a few weeks later, which was the fatal one, which was fetal high drops, where two or more organs of the unborn baby filled with fluid. And there's no treatment. There's no, you know, therapy. It's just, you know, it might resolve, but most times it doesn't. And so, you know, they prayed to Father McGivney. They knew he needed a miracle. They advised all their friends, all their knights. And this went throughout the country, this, you know, pray for the Shackle baby. Their name was Daniel and Michelle Shackle. And, you know, long story short, when Michelle went in for a ultrasound, the doctor said, I don't see any high drops here. And wow. And they said, is that so? The boy was born 2015. Without high drops, he still had Down syndrome. And I remember sitting with Daniel and Michelle, his vice postulator, saying, well, you know, we send this to the Vatican and they're going to say, okay, you were sealed up one, but what about the Down syndrome? And they looked at me like I had two heads and they said, well, we never prayed to take away the Down syndrome. We considered that God's will and we accept that life. And we know other families who have Down syndrome children, and all they can do is give love and receive love. And they're like the cherished member of the family. Little Mikey, we call him Miracle Mikey, is now 11 years old. And just as they said, he's the cherished member of the family. It's a large family. Mikey brings them all together in love. So,
we're going to have to stop there, but that was a beautiful place to end. I've been talking with Brian Caulfield, Vice Postulator for the Sainthood Cause of Blessed Michael McGivney. All the links will be in the description of today's program. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.